I think people thought we'd be incredibly insulted that Trump was rude to our Prime Minister, and that was objectively not the case.
I don't think Senator James McGrath cares too much about the feelings of Cuban Marxist revolutionaries.
It's been interesting that they say that the day is apolitical, but to move it is a political statement.
Backchat, the alternative to talkback on FBI Radio.
Hello and welcome to Backchat, your guide to the news of the week. I'm Ariel Bogle.
And I'm Osman Faruqi. Ariel, how you going? How's your week?
It's going pretty good. How about you?
Good, good, good. We had that tune that we just bumped from the agenda team. Boys, Charlie XCX, that came out this week.
I know. What a beautiful moment that was for everybody.
Your favorite.
Who's a fan of Boys, I suppose.
why has that resonated with you? It's not just the song, it's the video that you're into, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I'd encourage everyone to log onto YouTube, just search Charlie XCX Boys, and then, you know, just see the smorgasbord of the male variety on display for your viewing pleasure.
There's some Aussies in there as well, right?
Yeah, Flume's there, Vance Joy. Yeah. Who else is in there? Got some, you know, YouTube Vine stars.
Riz Ahmed, everyone's favorite boyfriend.
He's a good one. Yeah, it's a pretty good array.
All right, we could look, as usual, we could talk about this all day. And in fact, maybe we should, but there's more important things to cover as well on the show today. We've got Backchat alumni and creator of SBS comedies, The Backburner, Never Forget The Backburner, James Colley. His latest project is a book that's actually written by the most prominent dingo right-wing columnist you've never heard of, Peter Chudd.
We'll also be getting back into the Australian citizenship debacle. This story will not stop. Australian politicians are dropping like flies, and all because they had the audacity to have ties, whether parental, they were born there, ties to foreign countries. The Green Senators Scott Ludlam and Larissa Waters were all tripped up by Section 44 in the past weeks, and this prohibits MPs and senators from being dual citizens. But the constitutional rule may also claim former Cabinet Minister Matt Canavan. He's the Queensland Liberal National Party MP who blamed his mum for making him an Italian citizen.
Maddie.
Why would you do that? And also, I mean, some of us would love to be Euro citizens, Matt. Like, be grateful.
As a lot of Italian friends of mine pointed out this week, it's not a very Italian thing to do to kind of blame your mum for your citizenship.
No, like, problems. You can live and work in France, you can live and work in Sweden, like, God.
Yeah, Matt Canavan, actually, when he resigned, he was the Minister for Resources in Northern Australia, which is basically the Minister of trying to get the Adani coal mine built in Queensland.
Yeah.
When he resigned this week, he issued a statement saying how much of a pleasure it was to represent the mining industry. It's like, that's not what your job is, buddy. It's to represent the good people of Queensland. But an interesting insight into the way that the coalition government, I guess, approaches mining politics. But look, before we get into what a crazy week it's been in Australian politics, which I feel like we're saying every week these days, we have to give some time to America, because what is going on? First things first, the Republicans' latest effort to overturn Obamacare, something they've been trying to get rid of for years and something that the President Donald Trump is very keen to do. But their latest attempt collapsed last night after John McCain voted against the so-called skinny repeal. I don't really know why it's called skinny repeal. Do you know what the background
is? Well, it's because I think the legislation was ultimately only like 8 pages long.
Right, right.
They were just, you know, because they've obviously been, trying to coalesce a lot of different moderate and right-wing agendas into this repeal. So they've, you know, trying to give a little bit to everybody. And so it resulted in something that was like not much of anything.
So even though it was pretty basic, they couldn't get the support. John McCain joined 2 other Republicans, as well as all the Democrats in the Senate. They scuttled the bill. And look, after railing against Obamacare for 7 years, it's got to really hit the Republicans hard that they can't get it done. They've got the presidency, they've got the White House, they've got numbers in both houses of Congress, they've got a majority in the Senate, but they still can't get the support, get the votes to get rid of it. Maybe it's because people are kind of into healthcare?
Yeah. I mean, as any politician should know, once you give people an entitlement and access to things like healthcare, it's really hard to take it away from them.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny even calling it an entitlement, because from an Australian perspective, it just seems like a basic thing. And yeah, it's interesting that there just seems to be quite a groundswell in the community that even people like John McCain and others who are proud, staunch Republicans, even if they don't like Donald Trump, they can't bring themselves now to actually be responsible for abolishing health insurance for so many Americans.
Exactly. And also, I mean, if you're a follower of US politics, you've probably seen the huge grassroots campaign against this healthcare repeal. So, you know, thanks to McCain, I suppose, for doing the bare minimum. But really, like, amazing work to the grassroots movement there and the disability activists who, you know, chain themselves to politicians' offices to get this.
Yeah, very inspiring stuff.
But, you know, I feel like despite all that healthcare stuff, the real hero of the week was another guy that we will call the Mooch.
The Mooch.
This is Anthony Scaramucci, the new head of White House Communications and a self-proclaimed Wall Street guy. I don't know. I wish I had better, time.
Don't practice it on air. No.
The Wall Street guy. Anyway.
Stop it.
White House spokesman Sean Spicer was absolutely not into this situation, so he quit. And you might remember Spicer as the guy who called our PM Prime Minister Trumbull, which was a great moment for every Australian.
Absolutely.
And it said that Trump didn't like Spicer that much anyway, and he rubbed it in a few months ago by denying Spicer the chance to meet the Pope. And Spicer, of course, is a staunch Catholic, so this would have bruised him like a week-old pear.
He's like the most Catholic person in the White House, and the Pope came to visit, and Donald Trump, who's like not very Catholic, quite obviously, was like, no, it's great.
Brutal.
Great to hang out with the Pope, but Sean Spicer, you've got to wait in the lobby. You're not going to get to...
Just brutal. Yeah. So Sarah Huckabee Sanders was given Spicer's job, and I guess it's one for the ladies. She also has an insane name. Let's just note that too.
It's good, yeah.
Anyway, Scaramucci has been given some spicy interviews this week. Here's one of them.
What I don't like about Washington is people do not let you know how they feel. They're very nice to your face, and then they take a shiv or a machete and they stab it in your back. I don't like it.
You know, Anthony,
okay,
I'm a
Wall Street guy, and I'm more of a front-stabbing person.
I'm a Wall Street guy.
He's the director of communications for the White House. It's not where it ends, is it?
No, here's another.
So if Reince wants to explain that he's not a leaker, let him do that. I am a straight shooter, and I'll go right to the heart of the matter.
Good. There's some plain talk there. And here's yet another.
As you know from the Italian expression, the fish stinks from the head down. But I can tell you two fish that don't stink, okay? And that's me and the president.
I don't understand what that means. why are he and the president fish?
Fish, yeah.
Fish that don't stink.
Yeah, I think he's going to be like putting horse heads at the bottom of people's beds in mere moments.
But look, his actual best chat of the week was with a New Yorker reporter called Ryan Lizza. And unfortunately, we don't have audio of their very highbrow conversation. I don't think we'd be allowed to play it even if we did, because it's pretty spicy, saucy stuff. And for a White House comms director, the Mooch doesn't really seem to understand the concept of on the record or off the record. This is a chat that you might expect to have been off the record, not attributable to Scaramucci because of the very direct and aggressive way he talked about his colleagues, but it did all end up in print, and he ended up calling Reince Priebus, the White House Chief of Staff, a expletive, paranoid schizophrenic, a paranoiac, and then said Steve Bannon, the White House Chief Strategist, was trying to suck his own expletive. It's more satisfying when you say the words, but we're not sure that we can get away with it, but the drama is real. We love it. It's fantastic, and he saved, as you can probably tell by those quotes, most of his anger and fire for the Chief of Staff, Reince Priebus. And just as an aside, Reince Priebus, like that guy's name, it follows no rules of grammar. Because, you know, the I comes before E except after C. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for the first half of his name. It doesn't make sense for the second half of his name. It's just like, I say that as a guy called Osman Faruqi. Like, my name doesn't really make sense.
Yeah,
but...
and I'm Ariel. I've got the I before E, but in the correct manner.
Yeah.
How dare people be fucked? Messing around with grandma.
Oh, good save. But Priebus is the former chairman of the Republican National Committee, and he went on to become Trump's chief of staff. But Scaramucci didn't really like him. And he ended up winning that internal battle. This morning, Priebus announced his resignation. In fact, Donald Trump announced his resignation on his behalf, and he stepped down. And with Priebus gone, that basically means that all the classic old school Republicans are basically out of there, and it's just a Donald Trump show. But one of the funniest things is watching how quickly Wikipedia gets edited these days. And within minutes of the resignation happening, Reince Priebus's Wikipedia page was updated to have the very, very, very flattering phrase, the shortest serving chief of staff in White House history.
Yeah.
Which is pretty extraordinary. And
it's crazy times. And, like, you know, I'm not one to lament Reince Priebus. But nevertheless, it is scary to think that there's absolutely... basically no one left in the White House now with any sort of political experience. And you've seen this week, I'm not sure if you all have listened to the speech Donald Trump gave to the scouts this week.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
We could spend a whole show talking about that as well.
He also gave a very sort of violent speech yesterday before some cops, sort of encouraging them even to rough up people they had in custody, which was kind of crazy. So I feel like Trump, because he's losing and he doesn't like to lose, well, you know, his rhetoric is going to get even worse, perhaps more violent, and he'll just choose another scapegoat. Obviously, this week, he also announced on Twitter that they were going to be banning transgender people from the US military.
Which kind of came out of nowhere, right?
Proposal. So he just you know, thinks about which minority group to vilify that day, and he'll go for it on Twitter. So.
And I mean, the other extraordinary thing is that it feels like it's been forever, but it's only been 6 months.
I'm exhausted.
Into his 4-year term. So it's we're 1/8 of the way into the Trump presidency. And it's just like, I say this all the time, it's like, what could happen next? And they always find something to happen next.
Yeah.
But coming up later on the show, we're going to be talking a lot more about Australian politics and kicking that off with a chat, James Colley, and someone you might not have heard of, but turns out they're actually one of Australia's most prominent right-wing columnists, Peter Chudd. But first, we've got this tune for you from Briggs. It features the late, great Dr. Yunupingu. It's called The Hunt. It's The Hunt by Briggs featuring Dr. Yunupingu, who, of course, passed away this week, and commiserations to his family, the Skinny Fish family, everyone. That enjoyed the wonderful music that he made over his life. Only 46. Very, very, very tragic passing this week. But actually, there's, you know, Briggs, while we're talking about that tune, had some exciting news this week. Australia's own Briggs, not only is he a dope rapper, fantastic actor, funny guy all around, but he's going to Hollywood to write for Matt Groening's new TV show.
I know, it's amazing.
Matt Groening from The Simpsons. So that's really cool.
Congrats to Briggs.
Hopefully we'll find some time to talk to him about that as well. But speaking of very, very funny people, joining us in the studio is Backchat's own prodigal son, James Colley. He's back.
Hello.
James, how are you going?
It is wonderful to be back here. I believe this is one of the last Backchats before a format change. Is that?
Yeah, we're shaking it up, and we thought we had to get you
on board. I thought, like, as a symbol of the moment that this show started going downhill, it's nice, like, to come back and just celebrate.
Yeah, as we start the upturn. As well,
yeah,
the
graph exactly.
But look, it's great to have you back in the studio. You were part of the Backchat crew back in the olden days, but listeners probably might be familiar with you through your work as the creator of SBS's The Backburner. You're also the creator of The Nailed It, very funny evening down at Giant Dwarf. But more recently, you've written a book, don't really understand how it's working, with a right-wing media personality called Peter Chudd.
Yes, I transcribed a series of phone calls that Peter shouted at me between the hours of 3 and 5 a.m. over the course of a couple of months. And it's come out as a book called Too Right, Politically Incorrect Opinions Too Dangerous to be Published, Except That They Were.
Obviously, that's what's a book. So, James, just break down for us. Who exactly is Peter Chudd? Where did he come from?
Well, Peter Chudd is part of the silent majority that can't stop saying how silent they are. he is a powerful voice. He is a proud right-wing commentator, and he just wishes there was a place in Australian media for an outspoken white man with a history of horrible scandals.
And luckily he found you to channel those.
Yes, he very much possessed me.
So why has he decided to speak out at this time, and why have you decided to help him get that message out there?
Well, from my point of view, it was more of a hostage situation, but he just decided that this is a time for choosing amongst the Australian political scene, and it is about time that his voice was heard, even if it is just a high-pitched screech.
And so we were just talking about the American right wing and the sort of flaming whatever's happening over there. Well, how does Peter, like, is Peter Chudd a Sean Spicer? Is he a Scaramucci? Like, where does he fit in this sort of global right-wing spectrum?
So I think that a lot of Australian commentary has an interesting perspective on this, in which they wait to see what Trump does and then decide that was their ideology all along. We can see from, like, the trans-military bans this week, which hadn't come up before, but a couple of days afterwards, Latham's like, oh yeah, by the way, I also had that idea. Hugely
did he
behind
really
it.
Say that?
Yeah.
And someone very strange corrected him.
Andrew Bolt.
Andrew Bolt corrected.
Really?
When Andrew Bolt is saying to you, like, hey mate, you might want to rein it in a step.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. So tell us a bit, you know, how does the silent majority get a book deal? And
yeah, it's a good question, because usually they've just, aside from being silenced all the time, they're only really allowed to speak on Sky News, which, if you check the ratings, is essentially the same as being silenced. It was a difficult process, but luckily the good people at Allen and Unwin were tricked into releasing this, and now they're doing the best they can to get every copy collected and burnt, but if you can get yours before then, I'm sure it will be fine.
What I find, I notice is about the book when you first drop the image, James, and I think it's very funny. So the book itself, it looks like a quarterly essay, but it's got this yellow thing slapped over the top of it, which is in fact the title of the book. Is that a desperate attempt to get people to think that this is in fact the quarterly essay?
Well, I believe the thinking behind it was that Chud has been demanding for some time to do the quarterly essay, and it keeps getting passed on.
Right.
David Meyer has gone so many in the time that Chud hasn't even gotten one.
Just remind us what the quarterly essay is for people who are not fully down the liberal...
Who aren't old, boring, left-wing people like us.
It's, the quarterly essay is kind of like... as the New Testament is to Catholics, the quarterly essay is to lefties. It shows up quarterly to let them know what they believe now.
Oh, good.
And so Chud thought it was time that his voice was heard in this magazine.
And I've heard that we don't have Peter Chud in the studio, but we might have a recording of him. Is that something?
Yes, we brought along a recording.
Do you want to hit play on that recording for us, Ariel?
Yeah, here we go.
This is a piece entitled... Welfare is anything but welfare. And it begins with the quote, "Those with their hands out will soon have their hands up as they are arrested for being openly poor." And that quote is by me. What's the most dangerous Australian animal? Is it the great white shark? And yes, the shark is great and white. I will not take this back. Is it the crocodile? Perhaps it's something once considered mythical, like the Yowie, the Blue Mountains Panther, or the reasonable Greens voter. No, it's none of these things. It's very much real. It's present. It walks amongst us. It is the dole bludger. The dole bludger is the most dangerous Australian animal. A great white shark destroys a person, but the dole bludger destroys a society. But still, whenever you propose a cull of these vile creatures, the animal rights groups get all up in arms about it. Fortunately for us, the dole bludger is an endangered species. We're in the midst of a budget crisis, so we finally have carte blanche to remove a few undesirables under the guise of fiscal security. Whenever there are cuts to be made, all heads turn towards welfare. This is partly because our nation's welfare system is incredibly bloated, and I will not apologise for body-shaming our welfare system. There's a lot of hay to be made picking on the less fortunate, but it's also quite politically savvy. The vast majority are already disenfranchised, so at the risk of losing votes is very low. Add to this the limited capacity for political organising and you're already onto a winner. The best part is, in the event you're cutting funding to vital services, these people will be too busy trying to keep their fragile lives together in any way, shape or form that they simply will not have time to protest that successful policy making.
Jesus, that's much more spicier than I thought. That's going to put Mike Latham out of a business.
I think everything that could be done to put Mark Latham out of business has been done already. And short of taking away the Facebook Live app and closing every Red Rooster and Sizzler in the country, I don't know what we can do.
And all the pubs outside the family court. The text line has been blowing up with people just saying, ha 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 ha. So people are loving it. And look, if you've got any thoughts on anything on today's show or questions or anything you want to even ask James while we've got him back, he can text us in on 0409-945-945. And of course, we are talking to James Colley, Backchat's golden child, who's gone on to find great, fantastic success. And he's talking about his book, To Write, written by James as read to him by Peter Chud, Australia's. Is that the right way?
Yes. Like read, shouted down a phone line, all the same.
Yeah.
Perfect. So we've been talking a lot about the old white men of the right. Like, who's the next gen? Like, I want to know who's going to have their own Facebook Live TV show that five people watch?
Oh, I think it'll be interesting. I would love to see Caleb Bond's, Snapchat radical rebel media Snapchat feed.
Damn,
that would be incredible. Awesome. Yeah. Imagine someone arguing about white genocide, but with little puppy ears.
Beautiful. And if you don't know who Caleb Bond is, he's...
it's fine.
Don't look him up. It's not worth it. Don't Google him.
He's basically News Limited's baby rider, How old is he?
He turned 18. Yeah,
oh,
he's
beautiful.
Legally
yeah.
allowed
beautiful.
To
okay.
drink. I think he took a selfie at the pub.
It almost entirely coincided with me starting to sledge him publicly.
Yeah, now I don't feel guilty anymore because he's not underage. That's a weird word to use in that context. But James, you used to write for, you were the creator, in fact, of SBS's The Backburner, which was robbed from society, well
taken
before
behind the satire shed.
Yeah, and like a lot of, it's one of those things that I think just kind of permeated across all of the different sort of friendship groups. Like everyone I knew love the Backburner. They lived for the kind of very funny takes daily. And we don't have it, but, like, there's still funny stuff happening in politics, right? Like,
yeah, it's been a remarkable scene, and particularly these last couple of weeks. You know, honestly, the Backburner closed about a month ago now, and I haven't missed it. I've got my mornings back.
Oh, really?
It's
really?
just nice to have some headspace. But there have been a couple of times in this citizenship thing that I've been like, oh, it would be pretty fun to have a column to write this evening.
Well, we actually have another former Backburner contributor and great Backchat hero, Bishma Zook. She's got a excellent citizenship take coming up on the show.
Oh, beautiful.
That's fantastic. But you were just telling us the story before, which seemed, it's a moment that's happened just today that seems like it's ripe for Backburner parody. What happened? What's going on?
Oh, it's just that hip young Sam Dastyari has appealed to the
king.
Millennials at the Labour conference with the freshest new meme. He's Rickrolled them.
Oh,
remember
my.
Rickrolling? Get your dad to explain to you what Rickrolling was. And he bloody got them because they thought he would have a bit of substantive policy to talk about at their conference, but not just a video of Rick Astley.
To be fair, I don't know why I'm defending Sam Dastyari. It's not something I would normally do.
And Rickrolling.
It is 30 years. Yesterday was 30 years since the song was released.
It's true.
So there's like a vague anniversary connection. Not an excuse at all, but yeah, it's slightly less bad, you know, that he's done.
Yeah. I think the moral here is for politicians on the left and the right, they just don't do well at internet.
And, like, the biggest, like, populist, aside from... Oh, no, even Trump can be included. The biggest populist surge have been daggy old men who haven't tried to appeal to the youth. Like, it's the Steve Buscemi showing up with the skateboard and backwards cap.
Yeah,
it's like, Jeremy Corbyn looks like a man on the bus, and that's part of the appeal. The youth will get up around you. Ed Miliband before him was a youth sensation.
Yeah.
It's you don't need to appeal to these people. Mm. Just be good at what you do.
Yeah, be authentic and it'll happen organically, right?
Yeah, we're not coming to you for memes.
Yeah,
that's
all.
Oh, this person, I don't know if they can run the country. Give me one of those brain memes and they'll see.
That seems to be, I think that's a good example, actually, like the difference between someone like Corbyn and Dastyari. Like, Corbyn doesn't make his own memes. He just got the teens of the UK doing it for him, whereas Sam Dastyari seems to be spending most of his time pumping out his own memes.
Can you imagine if Corbyn had, like, sat at the crowd of Glastonbury and went, all right, everyone knows the riff from Seven Nation Army, right? I'd really like you to sing my name to that.
To that tune. Yeah, and so Sam Dastyari also has a book out. So, you know, your
this
book
is
and his book will be dueling on the charts.
Yes, his comes out very soon, although it may not. Like, I think there is some chance that he might meet with a donor and then have to quickly change the final chapter of the book. So,
it's called One Halal of a Story.
And apparently they got halal certification
for
the book.
So basically,
it doesn't seem like a gimmick at all. Like, that's a legit thing
Sam,
you do.
Sam trying to keep that story going. Of course, he invited Pauline Hanson to have a kebab.
Snack pack, right? Wasn't it?
Remember
HSPs? Remember when we were all talking about HSPs?
Do you think to some element he is like, you know, when Homer Simpson goes to hell and he's just force fed donuts forever?
Yes.
Is there some element of Sam being like, oh, okay, look, they're a delicious meal, but they're a sometimes food.
Yeah. I think he actually crowdsourced the name of his book, and
the
most popular response, because he built up this giant snack pack thing, was... But I think now he probably resents the fact that he's just the snack pack senator.
Why is it not called Donor Kebab?
That's a headline. That's a Backburner headline.
That's a book review title.
That's perfect.
Peter Chard can review One Halal of a Story.
James, your Sydney book launch for To Write is happening this afternoon.
Yes, at 4 p.m. at Better Read Than Dead in Newtown.
In King Street, good bookshop.
Hosted by Mark DiStefano. It should be a lot of fun.
Fantastic. And the book is available from now in all good bookshops?
Yeah, in all good bookshops.
Do you know what that means? Do you know why they say that? What are the bad bookshops?
I say that because...
The bad ones are Amazon.
Right. Yeah.
The bad ones are the ones that don't currently have it stocked, which means I don't need to keep track of who is it.
But thank you so much for coming in to Backchat this morning, James, and talking about Peter Chard and all things funny in politics.
Thanks for having me.
It's great talking to you.
You're listening to Backchat on FBI 94.5. And we're going to get back into the Section 44 story that keeps getting rid of our politicians. They're just dropping like flies.
Good, not enough.
I know.
Jail them all.
What's going to happen? No. There'll be no one left.
Good. Sorry. Sorry.
Stop. Please, but always text in. We'd love to hear from you on this topic. 0409 945 945. Do you have any suspicions about politicians out there that you once saw in Greece or Italy, say, and you think they've got some family ties?
The whole country has been gripped by like birtherism.
I know. Dob them in. Dob them in. So, of course, Section 44 is in the Australian Constitution. And if you haven't been on top of the news cycle, it's been easy to miss some of the detail of what's been going on. Every party, especially the Greens and now the LNP, has been affected by a media microscope on where Pollies and their parents were conceived.
Gross. I don't want to think about that.
No, no. It's, you know, it's a very intimate discussion. Like, yeah. Where did your parents birth you? Bishma Zook has taken a microscope to dual citizenship and the Australian Constitution.
Australian senators are dropping like flies. And no, it's not because Dutton cut the cheese during question time again. It's because of Section 44 of the Australian Constitution, particularly the first part of that section, which states, "Any person who is under any acknowledgement of allegiance, obedience, or adherence to a foreign power, or a subject or a citizen, or entitled to the rights or privileges of a subject or citizen of a foreign power, shall be incapable of being chosen or of sitting as a senator or member of the House of Representatives." I know it's long, but it's causing a ruckus in Parliament right now, so let's find out what's happening. It all started 2 weeks ago when Green Senator Scott Ludlam announced that he was also a dual citizen of New Zealand, a fact that he'd only just recently discovered. Like finding $5 in the crevices of your couch, except instead of being pleasantly surprised, it ends up ruining your entire life. His dual citizenship status made him retroactively unable to have stood for election 9 years ago in the first place, which led him to immediately resign from Parliament. While the Greens were still reeling from this announcement, he was their co-deputy leader after all. Just 3 days later, other Greens deputy leader Larissa Waters announced that she'd also just discovered her Canadian dual citizenship. While Malcolm Turnbull was quick to make a song and dance about the Greens' incompetence, on Tuesday this week, Resources Minister and Coalition member Matt Canavan resigned from Cabinet after admitting he was an Italian citizen. However, unlike Ludlam and Waters, Canavan has decided to not quit Parliament entirely as he prepares to take his case to the High Court for them to determine his eligibility. You see, Canavan believes that he didn't know he was also an Italian citizen. He claims his mum filled in his citizenship papers without his knowledge, and also supposedly hid all of those Italian voting forms he's received over the years. Pity he didn't also have a dog to blame for eating them all instead. He's hoping the wording of Section 44, which states the person must have an acknowledgement of allegiance or citizenship, will get him off the hook. However, ignorance of the law is not usually a valid excuse in court, or else most parking inspectors would be out of a job by now. Luckily for Canavan, his mother applied for Italian citizenship in 2006. If she'd done so just 4 years earlier, Australia's older Citizenship Act stated that he would have lost his Australian citizenship as soon as he gained his Italian one. This act was repealed in April 2002. Pretty neat how what the government likes to consider as unbreakable laws are broken and changed all the time, huh? I guess we'll just have to wait and see what the High Court decides in this case. However, it's not the first time that Section 44 has been used against Australian senators. In 1946 and 1956, cases were brought against senators for being Roman Catholics, which would supposedly make them have allegiances to a foreign power, namely the Pope and the Vatican. The allegations were thrown out on grounds of being based on religious discrimination. In 1987, Senator Robert Wood had a case brought against him due to certain protests he'd been involved in against visiting warships, again citing that this meant he had allegiances to foreign powers, although the prosecutors couldn't really identify exactly who those foreign powers were. I mean, I can think of far stronger allegiances to other powers that currently exist in our parliament, And I wonder if some plucky citizens will consider mounting similar cases today. As for Ludlam and Waters, only time will tell. While participating in a Q&A session at Splendor in the Grass last week, Greens leader Richard Di Natale offered a beleaguered, Greens-supportive crowd some hope by stating that Waters may be in the process of renouncing her Canadian citizenship, but official reports are yet to be seen. There are also previous examples of cases whereby some judges believed that the mere act of taking the oath of allegiance during an Australian citizenship ceremony should be sufficient to prove that your sole interests lie with Australia. As a country that is increasingly made up of people born overseas, this would have been the perfect time to take Section 44 to the High Court. The UK Parliament allows dual citizens to stand for election, so perhaps it's time we do too. There are 23 other current Australian MPs and senators who were born overseas. And as an immigrant myself, I find it pretty funny that people are falling over themselves to prove that they're on Team Australia, when Australia also likes to pride itself on its multiculturalism. Perhaps it's time to pick a side on not picking a side? As a wise girl once said, ¿por qué no los dos?
That was Bish Mazouk finishing her report about the intricacies of Section 44. You're listening to Backchat on FBI 94.5. So one thing I've been thinking about, obviously it's time for Section 44 to go, like, but it would require...
I wouldn't say obviously, Ariel.
In my personal view, it's obviously time for Section 44 to go. And the unfortunate thing is that it would require a referendum. That's pretty hard. Typically, referendums have to be run alongside a federal election. Would it be easier for the government to outlaw dual citizenship? I don't think they should. I'm a dual citizen and you are too, as we have found out in the past. I don't want to give it up. But is that the easier political option?
I actually have been working on a story about this week, and I know way too many boring, intricate details about that section in the Constitution. Here's the thing that hasn't quite been tested and everyone is kind of unsure about. It's why so many people are getting caught up in it. Even if you're not a dual citizen, even if you haven't formally accepted that citizenship, so even if the government of Australia prohibits you from it, you could still run afoul of the law because of you could be eligible to take it up at some point. So it's very, very messy. And there's been a High Court case that has tried to narrow it down. But interestingly, there was a Senate inquiry way back in 1981, way back before people started getting caught by this law, that basically said, look, this was written in 1901. When the Constitution was created. And the funny thing then is that there was no such thing as Australian citizenship in 1901. Yeah, we're all British subjects. Right. So the idea that now people who are dual British Australian citizens could run afoul of the law is very, very funny. But this report in 1981 said the law makes no sense exactly for the reasons that we've been talking about. And it needs to be dramatically shifted, and we need to do a referendum, and there should be bipartisan support. And if there was bipartisan support, people probably would get behind it.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether the context is different now, that if we change the referendum, I can just imagine One Nation running this campaign saying, you know, the major parties want foreigners to be allowed to serve in your parliament.
Which would be ironic, because the One Nation guy, Malcolm Roberts, is also very heavily under the microscope. Firstly, because he was born in India, so there was some chat about whether he would be an Indian citizen. And now there's like a sort of growing chorus about whether he's a UK citizen. And he hasn't yet released the sort of paperwork to definitively prove it one way or the other. Although there are documents out there that show him travelling as a child on a UK passport, it seems like.
That's right. Another document that shows someone with his name, Malcolm I. Roberts, being born in the same year in the same Indian town that he was born in.
Yeah.
And registered to the British High Commissioner as a British national. It's very funny that like there's a One Nation guy, Malcolm Roberts, who's very anti-immigration, but yet he could end up... Like, there's been rumours of him having, like, three different citizenships.
I know. I'd love it if he just turned out the Indian nation were just like, yeah, we'll take him. We'll take him just to mess with the rest of you. And I wonder if that could be a really cool strategy for some foreign enemies of Australia. You know, I don't know which ones.
Yeah, but just to offer citizenship
just to everyone. Reclaim some of their citizens. Like, I don't know, Vanuatu. Like, they just like you, Osman. Now you're a citizen of Vanuatu. You can never run for office.
Well, if there was a government... somewhere in the world that had beef with Australia, the best thing they could do was just grant everyone in Parliament citizenship and the
and
country would be
to
in
let
chaos.
Them revoke it, yeah.
Yeah. But before we move on from Malcolm Roberts, there's a funny story. It kind of slipped under the radar a bit this week because there was so much citizenship stuff going on. But if Malcolm Roberts is found ineligible, then what will happen is that there'll be a recount and the third person on the One Nation ticket will be elected. The problem is the third person on the One Nation ticket is actually facing bankruptcy proceedings in
awesome,
the federal court.
Awesome.
And Backchurch is not alleging that they've done anything wrong or in fact that they are bankrupt, but there are proceedings lodged against them. And if, you know, say that those proceedings went ahead and they were declared bankrupt, that would also rule them ineligible to serve in Parliament because Section 44 has another clause that means that says that if you're bankrupt, you can't be a senator.
Right.
So that would then go to the fourth person. And the fourth person is Pauline Hanson's sister.
Amazing.
Yeah, so through this kind of weird domino effect of citizenships, Pauline Hanson and her sister could end up representing Queensland in the Senate.
So what's the deal with Pauline Hanson's sister? I haven't heard hide or hair of her.
Yeah,
who's
so
this lady?
Turns out Pauline Hanson's got six siblings.
Oh, right.
And
imagine
this
if they're all
that,
they
the
could
Senate.
Just be one nation.
Yeah.
They are one family, one nation.
And I guess, I don't know whether, don't know anything about her. I guess she's down with the cause.
Mm.
Or maybe Hanson was just struggling to pad out the Senate ticket, so roped in members of her family.
Right.
But yeah, she could. I mean, like, to be honest, on the balance of things, it does seem pretty likely that Malcolm Roberts was a British citizen.
Yeah.
And if someone challenges him and you think that, you know, the Labour Party or someone would, he will get knocked out. And if this person's bankrupt, and again, we're not alleging that they are, but if the High Court finds it, they get knocked out. It's just like there's so many mad permutations and paths that this whole citizenship could take us down. I'm very excited to watch it.
Yeah, we got a text about this. It says, Schadenfreude is a beautiful feeling. And yes, it is.
Hell yeah.
If you want to text us in, give us your name and where you're from too, and we'll give you a shout out.
0409-945-945. We want to hear from you.
So moving right along, we're going to have a discussion next up about future of journalism, I suppose, the future of Backchat.
Are we? Are we?
The future of journalism.
Whoa, a lot
yeah.
of future. Yeah, yeah. We've got some exciting stuff, some sad stuff and some exciting stuff to
so
announce.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
So we've got some sad news for the Backchat family and all you guys, our lovely, lovely listeners. Our beautiful, beautiful executive producer, Emily Jane Smith, is moving far away from us. She's not leaving the country, but she is going to the other side of it to get
yeah.
away from us.
Basically leaving the country.
Well, now you've called me beautiful. Maybe I will stay.
Stay gorgeous, Emily.
Yeah.
You probably will recognise Emily's voice from her amazing packages over the years, but most of the time she's behind the scenes wrangling us during the week, early on Saturday mornings.
Waving my arms frantically.
Yeah, yeah, making gestures like cut, 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 you know, trying to get the radio pulled off air as
That's
we go.
That's it. Rogue. It's been the majority of my role here. But
what are you going to get up to?
Yeah, so I'm very sad to be leaving the Backchat family, but I have been offered a role as a features reporter for the ABC in Broome. So, yeah. So,
horn. Boop, boop, boop.
Whoop, whoop. Yeah. I'll be doing that, I guess. And listening from Broome. Don't think I'll forget about you guys. I can still roast you, thousands of kilometres away.
It'll be like lunchtime for you. Oh, wait, no, you're
behind. It'll be early morning.
Oh, early morning.
You're going to get up real early to listen to us?
Yeah, of course.
Fantastic. Of course. It's not just Backchat you're leaving, though. It's the FBI family. You've been around for a little while.
Yeah, I've been, volunteering on and off for a few years and for the last, year quite solidly. And, for anyone listening, support community radio because it's such a great opportunity. I certainly wouldn't have had this opportunity right now to be a reporter for the ABC if I didn't get involved in community radio.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's an interesting time for community radio. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a time when community radio was flush with funds.
No, exactly.
But nevertheless, there's always, funding cuts and sort of belt tightening going on across all community radio stations, not just FBI.
Mm.
So, yeah, I guess it would be great to hear from you why you think these sort of community stations and community shows are important, especially for young people, because, of course, FBI is, run off the back of really young people that want to get up and
donate their time. I was thinking about this the other day because volunteering for community radio, a lot of people are like, you do that for free?
Mm. Tell us how you got started. How did you end up in the FBI fam?
I did. Incidentally, there's presenter training going on now. No, I was a writer for the FLOG. The FLOG back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, when I was maybe 19. And then auditioned to be a presenter, did the all-nighters for about 18 months. Then I went overseas for a while, you know, really decided that I wanted to be a journalist and came back, heard about Backchat, and here I am, volunteered for a long time for Backchat, and then got the great opportunity to be the executive producer. And it's been unforgettable.
Yeah, and you taught both Ariel and I how to make live radio.
Yeah.
Remember our all-night session?
Yeah, the night, that we spent 6 hours, you know, trying to work out how to use the buttons here.
Yeah. I honestly haven't eaten another M&M since then. I think it's been like a good year, but I will never touch an M&M in my life again.
We ate way too much sugar that night. But yeah, you know, this is a conversation that people are having all the time in our industry. It's, you know, the digital future, you know, the integrity of journalism and fake news and all that sort of stuff. You know, where is journalism going? And the future of journalism's right here.
In this room.
But like with things like community radio. Yeah.
FBI is one of the few places, to be honest, in Sydney where you can learn to report, make radio reportage, learn how to cut, learn how to record interviews, learn what makes a good radio segment. Yeah. You know, there's very few places, and they are really important sort of feeding grounds, I suppose, for the bigger networks like ABC or wherever else.
Yeah, ABC keeps poaching all of the best Backchat FBI.
Yeah, throw us a bone, guys.
Yeah, our listeners probably will remember Heidi Pett, one of the
old
EP and co-host of Backchat, also poached and stolen by the ABC. Having a sick party tonight. I'm allowed to shout out the people. I won't ruin her farewell party.
Yeah, gate crashes alert.
It's been a lot of fun working with you over the past kind of 12 months or maybe even more than that now. It's all kind of blurred together. The Friday nights blur into the Saturday mornings as we put the show to air. And we're going to miss you a lot.
Guys,
what's your favourite
story,
though? You've done some cracker stories for us.
Yeah.
Any most notable ones?
Well, incidentally, one of the stories I did as a volunteer, I submitted when I was a student, for the Walkleys, and it was part of the nomination, so I guess that was all right.
What was the story about, Emma?
It was about rheumatic heart disease. So it's basically a condition that's affecting almost exclusively Indigenous people in Australia. Mm. And, you know, of course, us Sydney-siders don't really know much about that.
Totally. And you were shortlisted for a Young Walkley.
Yeah. I felt like I was spruking myself.
No. I jumped in to save you.
So I didn't have to do that. But those stories that I did were for Backchat.
Amazing.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So we've also got some news about Backchat. We're not going anywhere, but we are going to change formats a little bit.
Mixing it up.
Yeah.
Keeping things fresh.
We're going to be bringing you, you know, a lot more sort of analysis and politics in a half-hour format, staying at 11 a.m., but 11 to
3:30.
11 to
11:30. 11 to 3:30. Yeah, stop. Four and a half hours of back chat.
Oz and Ariel's banter.
I hope you stay tuned for those 4 hours.
About Charlie XX
song.
Yeah, yeah. We're just tightening it up a bit and focusing a bit more on the analysis and kind of cutting through the story. So, you know, you'll read the news throughout the week, you'll find out what's going on. But if you want to know what it means and what the real story is, like imagine Insiders on Sunday, but less boring, less old white people on TV and more exciting, cool people talking about different topics.
Yeah, on your radio.
Yeah. And we want to hear from you guys as well, what sort of stuff you want us to cover during the week. So you can hit us up on Facebook, just search for Backchat, or tweet us at BackchatFBI. And even though we're losing M to the Wild West, we got a new great new EP, Sam Johnshire, who's kicking off.
Yeah, she's going to kill it and probably do a better job than me and you'll forget about me.
No, we'll never forget about you. But the text line already, people are saying, bye, Emily, we'll miss you. Congrats on the new job. People love you. But yeah, Em, on behalf of the Backchat crew and I guess our listeners, thank you so much for everything.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Thank you.